MechCast, Sunday, March 8th, 2020. Hey, Mech Geeks, it's time for your MechCast, the show for Mech Geeks by Mech Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things MacDash. How you doing? Welcome back to the MechCast. Well, happy Daylight Savings Time Day if you're here in the United States, maybe other parts of the world as well. But certainly I woke up this morning and lost an hour of my day, and consequently, I'm feeling a little bit beat. Yeah, it's amazing what that time change can actually do to you. But I'm happy that we're going to have more daylight now. I actually hate Daylight Savings Time. I wish we never went on or off of it. I wish we'd just stay permanently in this mode. So I like this mode better, but it always wreaks havoc on you when you wake up on a Sunday morning and you've lost an hour. It feels like you've lost some productive time in your life that you're never going to get back. But hopefully you're having a great weekend. Hopefully you've had a great week. Looking through the Apple news and stuff, we don't have a ton of things going on right now, but we have some interesting things to get into and to talk about. What the future of Apple products and their displays are going to look like. Yeah, we have some news related to that. A lot of, unfortunately, coronavirus, COVID-19 stories. We're going to get into some of the ways that that is impacting Apple, and there are a bunch of different ways where it's impacting Apple. We're going to talk about potential new AirPods, also a repair program if you are an iPad Air owner, and some possible new Apple Watch features. And that's going to round out the news for this week. And then I am feeling a little bit tired. I've also been fighting off a little bit of nastiness, not coronavirus, just general cold stuff. But I have a few bits and tips and tricks in the feedback section for you. We're going to talk about something you should know about when it comes to Apple warranties and third-party buying from third-party suppliers. So if you're not buying directly from Apple, there's something I found out about that can affect your warranty that I will share with you, and that's thanks to a listener. And then also, I want to have a quick conversation about Apple TV Plus and its shows, more about the content and how people are reacting to the content. I want to get into that a little bit and ask your opinion on that. And that's probably going to round out this episode of the MacCast. So before we get into things, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, and a very important show sponsor to the MacCast here, because it's CashFly. CashFly is the reason that you are hearing this show right now. They are the folks that help me get the audio out to you quickly and reliably, and I absolutely love them for that. They are great at delivering content, and they also want to help you improve your website and your business, because when websites don't load, people can lose interest. It's really important that you have a fast-performing website. As a matter of fact, they say for every second it takes for a page to load, it can cost a company about 16% in engagement. That means you're getting fewer visitors, and that means fewer customers. Not good for anyone. Well, CashFly has your back with their new web optimization capabilities. All of your content can be optimized before it is delivered to your visitors without requiring any development effort from you. And with the recent addition of CashFly's flexible edge application platform and implementation services, their capabilities can go far beyond those of any traditional CDN. CashFly's web content optimization solution includes powerful APIs for solving content distribution problems, on-the-fly next-gen image optimization, application load balancing, and smart asset delivery. So if your website is directly tied to your revenue, and you know that it is, you can optimize your site's content now. Guarantee the best user experience for all of your customers, no matter where they are or what device they are using, and do it today. And like I said, the folks at CashFly, they are awesome. As a matter of fact, they're even going to provide a free optimization consultation for listeners of this podcast. That's right, just for you. You can find out exactly where your site stands today with a Lighthouse score report, and you can learn how CashFly's web optimization solutions can help you add 60 points instantly to your score. Just visit mac.cashfly.com. That's M-A-C dot C-A-C-H-E-F-L-Y.com, mac.cashfly.com now, and check out what Cashfly and their web optimization solutions can do for you. And a big thank you to Cashfly for their support of the show. Our favorite Apple analyst, Ming-Chi Kuo, thinks that Apple is going to go, I'm not going to say all mini LED this year, but he thinks that a lot of new Apple products are going to be featuring mini LEDs in 2020. As a matter of fact, in a recent research note to his investors, he says he thinks that Apple will launch at least 6 new products with mini LEDs this year. In my opinion, probably the most exciting one is a potentially new MacBook Pro, a 14.1-inch model to replace the current 13-inch model. In addition to getting an updated display, it's also expected that the smaller MacBook Pro would adopt the new Scissor Switch Magic Keyboard that Apple introduced with its larger 16-inch MacBook Pro last year. The advantages of going mini LED are pretty extensive. First of all, they would be thinner, and they would also be able to offer a rich, wide color gamut, higher contrast ratios, high dynamic range, and localized dimming, which I think means they're going to be a bit more energy efficient, all things that Apple could benefit from in designs for their new products. As a matter of fact, the other products that Kuo expects Apple to launch in 2020 with mini LED displays are a 12.9-inch iPad Pro update, a 27-inch iMac Pro update, an updated 16-inch MacBook Pro, and a 10.2-inch iPad and 7.9-inch iPad mini update. So like I said, a lot of these mini LED displays are being expected to come to Apple products in 2020. The only product he put a possible release date on, though, was the iMac Pro update, which he predicts could arrive in the fourth quarter of the year. And I think it's no surprise that all of these products would be getting updates in 2020, but the idea of some new display technology is, I think, pretty exciting. A few other products we're expecting to see updated. Apple leaker CoinX, who's had some successful predictions in the past, posted on Twitter that he thinks we'll see updates of the Mac Mini and the iMac lines, he says, coming soon. Didn't unfortunately provide any kind of specific timeline, but if you look at the history, the Mac Mini was last updated in 2018, so it's 2 years since we've had an update, albeit Apple took about 4 years the last time they updated it, but there's new processor technology and other things out there, so I think it's reasonable to expect we might see a Mac Mini update this year. He also said that the iMac line would be getting an update, and I would imagine that could happen in the spring, because the last time we saw an iMac update was last spring. So maybe that'll come in this rumored March announcement. And I would likely expect these would be simply performance upgrades, both for the Mac Mini and the iMac lines, bringing new CPUs and maybe some new GPUs to the lineup. But I wouldn't expect many, if any at all, design changes, and probably not any reconfiguration of ports or connections or anything like that. So it's probably just going to be a spec bump, and I think that likely could happen probably in the first half of this year and could even come with those rumored March announcements. Unfortunately, the world continues to feel the impact of the COVID-19 coronavirus, and Apple certainly has not been immune to that. As we've mentioned on past shows, we're expecting an update to the iPhone SE, what I've been calling the iPhone 8 SE 2, or others have been calling the iPhone 9 update. We're hearing that that has entered the final phase of verification before it goes to assembly with manufacturers, and we were expecting or are expecting to get an announcement about that product possibly at the end of March. The device, if you remember, is expected to be a 4.7-inch LCD screen with Touch ID, an updated faster A13 chip, and increased memory of 3 gigabytes. It's expected to start at 64 gigabytes of storage and come with a price tag of US$399. So this is the new lower cost iPhone update. Supplies and release date, though, could be impacted by the coronavirus outbreak. And in fact, there was news this week that Apple may have possibly deferred shipments of printed circuit boards from a supplier into the second quarter. So if Apple's going to have an announcement at the end of March, that could mean that supplies may be short or that a release date could get pushed back. Apple retail stores have reportedly been warned about short supplies on replacement iPhones. This is according to Bloomberg in direct response to the virus. The constraints are expected to last for about 2 to 4 weeks. And according to the report, some stores are also noticing shortages of repair components as well. So if you're expecting an Apple repair or a replacement iPhone or device, just be prepared that in the coming months, you might have to wait a little bit longer than in the past. Again, globally, this is all having an impact on the supply chain. As a matter of fact, the New York Post is also claiming this week that iPhone 11 supplies at New York City Apple stores are running low. So if you're looking for a new model iPhone and you're wanting a particular model or color or something like that, again, be prepared that you might not be able to get that exact model you want, or if there is one that you had in mind, you might be waiting a little bit longer. Apple had also announced that they would not be attending South by Southwest 2020 this past week. They were actually going to go there and premiere three new Apple TV Plus original shows, The Beastie Boys Story, Central Park, and Home. They have since said that they are not going to be doing that. I would imagine that they will simply be making announcements through their website or maybe through other channels. Later, after Apple made their announcement about not attending and unrelated to Apple's decision, the festival organizers actually announced that the entire festival was being canceled for this year. And then finally, Santa Clara County is recommending that the companies in the county, like Apple and Google, postpone or cancel any mass gatherings that they have planned. I think that's for the recent and near future. So it's likely too early for any official announcement from Apple, but there are already rumors and speculation that this could potentially impact Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference, which would be scheduled for around June. Too early to tell if it will be canceled, but it's something that Apple might be considering, and that developers who potentially might won't be wanting to attend that conference should be prepared for. And then as far as Apple itself goes and its employees, they did announce this week that any employees who can should plan on working from home if their job allows it. So certainly COVID-19, again, has large global impact. It is pretty devastating and serious at this point. A lot happening, of course, day to day with different companies, different organizations, different events. And certainly Apple has not been immune from the impact, as we can see in the news this week. We continue to hear a little bit more about a potential new update for AirPods Pro, Apple going with maybe a lower cost version of the lineup, something that DigiTimes is calling AirPods Pro Lite. Probably not the official name, but the best name that we have for it at the time. DigiTimes claims that production will begin on the new product around early to mid-April. At this point, what light means is anyone's guess. I would think that it likely means that Apple will be doing an update to the original AirPods, picking up the design of the AirPods Pro, but not adding in the active noise cancellation. So basically taking the AirPods with the wireless charger, the ones that come in at about $199 US, updating those to use the AirPods Pro design with the silicone tips and keeping the price point at around $199 US. So I think at $159 US, you would have the original AirPods with the original case, and then you would have AirPods Pro in two versions, the AirPods Pro Lite or the lower cost ones at $199, and then of course the current model version at the $249 price point. Looks like there could be some new health features coming to the Apple Watch soon, at least according to 9to5Mac. They say that they have seen iOS 14 code snippets that seem to indicate a new health feature coming to an updated Apple Watch, the ability to detect blood oxygen levels. This is something that we've heard Apple has been working on in the past. They say it's unclear at this point if the new feature would require new hardware, which I suspect it would, knowing Apple, or if it could be enabled in a software update. The reason for that speculation is that existing Apple Watch Series 5 hardware is believed to have the capability of measuring blood oxygen levels through its built-in heart rate sensor, but it's just a feature that Apple hasn't enabled. Rumor in the past had been that they just couldn't get it to be reliable or accurate enough, or at least not accurate enough for Apple to enable the feature. There are some other devices, health devices out there that do feature blood oxygen level detection, but it's just not something that Apple's brought to the Apple Watch yet, and it's sounding like they may be getting ready to do that. The feature would supposedly trigger a notification to the wearer if it detects blood oxygen saturation levels below a certain level, sort of like the low heart rate notification that you get on current Apple Watch. Apple is also reportedly working on improvements to the ECG readings of the Apple Watch. It was recently revealed that readings can be inconsistent with heart rates between 100 and 120 beats per minute. I think we may have brought that up on the last episode of the MacCast. They are supposedly working on a fix for that, so that will be an improvement that we can expect as well. And it's also been previously reported that Apple is planning to bring in and add sleep tracking capabilities to a future Apple Watch update as well. So I would imagine that all three of these features will be enhanced and added into the Apple Watch this year. It's probably going to happen later in the year, along with the announcements of the new iPhones and all those sorts of things. But I would imagine if some of it is triggered by software updates, we could possibly see some of it a little bit sooner. And then finally, in the news for this week, Apple has a new repair program if you own a third generation iPad Air. The new repair program is to deal with a bug that is in a limited number of units that can cause the screen to go suddenly and permanently blank. Well, that would not be fun, and hopefully you're not afflicted by this. But if you have a third generation iPad Air, they do note that sometimes you'll see a brief flicker or maybe a flash before the screen goes completely blank. And if that is the case for your device, you can check on Apple's website. I'll have a link to it in the show notes at maccast.com, the support article. But Apple does say that the affected devices were manufactured between March 2019 and October 2019. Any third-gen iPad Air user experiencing this issue will be able to get their device repaired by Apple or an authorized Apple service provider free of charge. And the new program does cover affected third-generation iPad Air models for 2 years after the first retail sale of the unit. So you have a little bit of time to get your device replaced, but I would imagine if the screen has suddenly gone blank and you can't do anything about it, you're going to be contacting Apple sooner than later. Good news now is, though, you're not going to have to pay for that repair, even if you are past your original Apple Care warranty. So again, I'll have a link to that program in the show notes at maccast.com. But with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank another show sponsor, and that is ExpressVPN. I know we've talked many times in the past about the advantages, the security and privacy advantages of using a VPN here on the MacCast. It is great for protecting your privacy when you're surfing online, especially when you're away from home, maybe at a hotel or at a coffee shop working, something like that. And as you probably know, there are a ton of VPN providers out there. You've probably heard of a couple of them. You've maybe even used a VPN before. Well, I'll tell you that right now, ExpressVPN is my favorite go-to VPN. It has been that way for about a year now, and that is because it's awesome. ExpressVPN has all the features you'd want from a VPN. First and foremost, privacy. They do not log your data. A lot of the really cheap VPNs, the free ones, they make money by selling your data to companies, and that's expressly why you use a VPN. You don't want that data getting out there. As a matter of fact, ExpressVPN developed a technology called Trusted Server that makes it impossible for their servers to log any of your info. I've also found ExpressVPN to be fast and reliable, another thing that you don't get with some of the cheaper VPNs. It does not slow you down. You can even do things like stream HD quality video, something that a lot of VPNs don't let you do. And finally, I love how easy it is to use. And this may be my favorite feature because this is technologically challenging stuff, but they take all of that away. All you have to do is install the app, choose the VPN location you want, and click a button. It's literally one click, and you're protected and on the VPN. And plus, it works that way for all of your devices. Mac, iPad, iPhone, it is awesome. And it's not just me saying this. TechRadar, The Verge, CNET, and many other tech experts rate ExpressVPN as the number one VPN in the world. So protect yourself with the VPN that I use and trust. Use my link, expressvpn.com/Maccast today, and get an extra 3 months free on a 1 year package. That's expressvpn.com/Maccast, ExpressVPN.com/Maccast, and visit ExpressVPN.com/Maccast to learn more. And a huge thank you to ExpressVPN for their support of the show. Every once in a while here, I will get an email from someone and they will tell me about an Apple policy or something that Apple is doing that I just can't believe. I like hear this thing and I'm like, there's no way this can be true. I have to check this out for myself. And that happened to me this week when I received an email from Alan. And he was telling me about an experience that he had with Apple, and at first I was in complete disbelief, but I was shocked to discover that what he was telling me was actually true. And what he was basically telling me was that if you buy a product from a third-party retailer, somebody that is not Apple, an Apple product or an Apple-related product, in this case a Beats product, that it can shorten your warranty. And I thought, there's no way this is reality. But here's what happened to Alan. He had purchased a set of Beats headphones from Target. He had an issue with those under the original one-year warranty, and he contacted Apple to have them repaired. And when he got a hold of them, they told him that he would have to pay for the repair. And he was a little bit puzzled by that and questioned it. And when he did, his case was escalated to a senior support representative. And he was asked where he purchased the item. He explained that it was at Target, a third-party retailer. And then he was asked if he could provide a receipt to show that when he had actually purchased the product and where he had purchased the product from. He was able to do that. He sent that to them over a secure connection that they provided. And once they verified his purchase and where he purchased it, the representative told him, well, I can give you a one-time exception for this repair. We'll go ahead and do the repair. But any future repairs are not going to be covered under your warranty. And again, he was very puzzled by that, as was I when I heard this story. And he asked, well, why is this an exception? I purchase the product. It carries a one-year warranty. Why are you not honoring my one-year warranty? And the representative proceeded to explain that this was pretty standard policy when purchasing from a third-party reseller. And they said that basically what happens is the warranty starts when the third-party retailer, Target in this case, purchased the headphones from Apple. And because they purchased the headphones from Apple in 2018, the warranty expired in 2019. And that is just crazy. He was told this is standard Apple policy for all products sold to third-party retailers, at least here in the U.S. I don't know how it goes for other countries. I think there's different laws and regulations depending upon where you are. But this is crazy, right? Like, how is this even reality? Like, this doesn't make any sense. And I thought the same thing and did a bunch of research, and it turns out this is almost correct. Luckily, it's not 100% correct. Not surprisingly, Apple's senior support person didn't quite give the whole story. And this idea of a one-time exception for the repair, I don't think is entirely accurate, at least not in Alan's case, because he did have the receipt. He was able to provide that information. And let me explain a little bit. It is actually true that for Apple products sold in third-party stores like Best Buy or Target or Walmart, the warranty is logged in Apple's system as beginning when the store bought the items from Apple. And you might be going, like, that in itself sounds crazy. Like, why would they do that? And the reason for it, from my research, is that Apple sells in bulk to these stores. And when they do that, the inventory is no longer in Apple's system. So basically, they take that inventory out of their system and it's put into the third-party system. And at that point, they don't maintain any records for it. So they don't know when those items are sold. The only thing they know is when they sold them to the retailer. And so as far as Apple's system is concerned, they've sold the product, the warranty has started. Now, Apple does maintain the serial number records, but the problem is that those serial numbers get attached, in my opinion, erroneously to that original sales date when they sold it to that third-party retailer. So that's what's happening on that side. And so then when you go to purchase it, the purchase record is with Target or Best Buy or Walmart or wherever, whatever third-party retailer you bought it at, and Apple doesn't have a record of that. Now, I would think that when you then go and register that product with Apple, they could have a system in place to trigger that and sort of say, okay, now your warranty starts because we see that you just registered it. But they don't do that for whatever reason. And maybe that's because there could be some sort of discrepancy. Again, they don't. I think the problem is they don't have the sales record, right? They don't know what date that was bought. So that's why it exists this way and why Apple does it this way. I'm not saying it makes sense because it doesn't make sense to me from a customer service standpoint, but what you need to know is that this policy does exist, and more importantly, you need to know what you can do about it so that you can get the full warranty for the full period of time you deserve to get that warranty if you're in this situation. And so what you need to do, if you purchase from any retail store that is not an Apple store, is first thing I would do is register the product with Apple. Again, that's not going to change the warranty date, but at least you get your product in their system attached to the serial number and attached to you as the person who owns that product. Then what you're going to want to do is contact Apple support, either via phone or chat, and you're going to ask them to retroactively change your warranty period. Now, to do that, you're going to need to have proof of your purchase and proof of the date of your purchase. So make sure you have your order receipt with a date on it and be prepared that you're going to need to provide that to Apple. Unfortunately, you're going to have to prove to them when you bought that product, but then they should be able to, and from what I hear, they are very helpful with this. They should very, very easily be able to retroactively change the date of your warranty to the correct purchase date, and then you will get your full warranty from that point forward. I haven't personally had to deal with this. I am just reading stories and hearing about this online. I have not seen anybody really saying that this has been a problem. I would assume it's not a problem. But if you've had an experience with this, positive or negative, I would love to hear from you. And I certainly have a big thank you to give to Alan for alerting me to this and letting me be able to let you know that this is a thing, because I had no idea. And I've been following and covering Apple for, you know, more than 15 years now. So it was a shock and surprise to me. And it's all a little bit crazy. I think they could maybe figure this policy out a little bit better. But this is the way it stands right now. So if you have had an experience with this and want to share your thoughts and opinions, please shoot me an email, send me an audio comment, maccast@gmail.com. But Alan, again, thank you for sending this one in, because it's all a little bit shocking in my opinion. Okay, the last thing I want to talk with you about today is Apple TV Plus and Apple TV Plus shows, because I really want to hear your opinions if you've been watching any of Apple's new original series, any of their movies, their documentary stuff, whatever it is you're watching. I want to hear from you. I want to know if you're enjoying it, how you think it compares to maybe other things that you're watching. I want your, basically your reviews. And if you want to send an audio review, that would be awesome. Please keep them brief, maybe 2 to 3 minutes. And I'd love to share those on the show. But the reason I'm bringing this up now is because there have been a lot of really bad and critical reviews of Apple's TV shows. A lot of the critics are calling the programs mediocre, lackluster, uninteresting, uninspired, a lot of very negative words. And this is despite shows like The Morning Show actually picking up awards in their first season on an entirely new streaming service, which is a very rare thing. You know, Netflix and Amazon, some of these other services, didn't start winning awards for their shows for a couple of years after they started actually producing them. So for Apple to come out of the gate in year one and actually get some recognition, that's a pretty significant thing. And in my opinion, that's a sign of the fact that these shows are actually pretty good. They have a lot of amazing, talented actors and producers and writers. And like, these are shows being done by some of the best folks in Hollywood. And so it's surprising to me that we're seeing all of these negative reviews. And I have a feeling that Apple is getting a little bit of a brunt of being the new guy on the block, and that critics are being, maybe because they're, you know, hiring some pretty talented people, that I think critics are maybe being a little bit more critical of Apple and their shows. Maybe it's because they're a tech company and not a television studio or traditionally in the industry. I don't know where it comes from, but I'm getting the sense, and I could be wrong. It could be my rainbow-colored glasses and my Apple fandom coming through a little bit. But honestly, I've been watching a lot of this content. I've been consuming a lot of this content. And for me, it's been great. I've been actually enjoying it. And another thing that sort of supports my little theory here is there was some interesting data from Flixt that shows that Apple TV Plus has one of the widest gaps between audience and critic scores on Rotten Tomatoes. So, you know, you can go on Rotten Tomatoes and you can give a rating, a score to a show, and it's out of 100%. And if you look at Apple TV Plus shows, it's showing an average critic score of around 69% for, this is aggregate, all of their shows kind of averaged together. But the audience scores, the scores coming from people that are actually watching it and aren't professional critics, those are 87%. So that's an 18% gap between what the critics think of the shows and what actual audiences think of these shows. And if you look at other services in the same study, like Hulu, Netflix, and Amazon, the discrepancy is only between 2 to 6%. Audiences generally tend to like the shows better than critics, but it's a much smaller discrepancy, a third of the percentage, right? And so why is that? That is a little bit odd. And another interesting number in this survey is that while Apple's shows have the lowest scores among critics at 69%, they have the highest scores among audiences, beating out even Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, HBO, and Disney Plus, all the other services for their original content. So overall, audiences are responding more positively to Apple's shows than they are to shows, original content shows on other services. Now, granted, those other services have many, many more shows. And especially if you look at somebody like Netflix, their range between quality of, you know, their sort of top most popular original content shows versus all the stuff they pump out, you know, that's probably pulling the numbers one way or another. So we have to kind of make sure we're keeping things in perspective here. But getting back to the conversation I want to have with you, this is about, are Apple TV Plus shows, I was going to say good quality shows. I think they are good quality shows, but are they interesting shows? Are they things that audiences are enjoying? Are they things that you're enjoying? And this kind of all came to a head for me this week. And one of the reasons I wanted to start talking about it was, as you know, a show, I grew up in the 80s, a show that I was really looking forward to on Apple TV Plus is the reboot of Amazing Stories, which is a anthology show that was done originally in the 80s by Steven Spielberg. And I was very much looking forward, because he's producing this one for Apple TV Plus as well, I was looking for looking forward to this coming out, excuse me. And it came out this week, the first episode in the new series, and it was immediately getting panned by the critics. And I saw these reviews, and it affected me. I kind of thought, oh, maybe I don't even really want to watch it, because maybe I'm just going to be disappointed. And I thought, no, that's kind of crazy. That's not what I want. I want to, you know, form my own opinion of this. And so I went ahead and I watched it this weekend. And while it's not going to win any, you know, big awards, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I thought it was very true to the old series. And to be honest, the old series was not like anything to write home to anyone about, but it tells the same great, innocent, fun stories that the original series did. And I really feel what Steven Spielberg was trying to create with Amazing Stories back in the 80s and is trying to create now is this kind of 50s, 60s popcorn matinee style entertainment that he sort of grew up with. These are just fun, creative stories. They're sci-fi, they're fantasy, they're comedy, a little bit of drama here and there. And they are just well-produced, fun, little one-hour stories. And I don't think they're meant to be, you know, Emmy Award-winning dramas or something like that. I don't know what critics are expecting. I think they're just fun. I also think that critics these days, if it doesn't have shock value, if it doesn't have tons of sex and nudity and graphic violence and all that stuff, it's boring, it's unimagined, and, you know, we're not doing anything interesting if we're not doing that. And that is infinitely frustrating to me, because I think there's a lot of content out there. I think there's a lot of room for range and creativity and just fun things, right? Just why can't we have an innocent, fun show that people just enjoy, that you can sit down with your family for an hour and watch and just have a good time? Why does that immediately get panned by critics? If it's not edgy enough, if it's not like reinventing something, why does that immediately make it bad or not worthy of our time to watch? And so I think Apple's getting some of that thrust upon them with these new shows. So that's sort of what I was feeling this week. And then just more generally, I wanted to have a conversation and find out from you what you think about Apple's content. Because for me in general so far, I think that everything on Apple TV Plus that I've watched, I've actually really enjoyed. I haven't watched everything that they've put out, and obviously I've enjoyed some shows more than others. But I think I've talked about some of my favorites on here. Probably my favorite of all of the series so far has been For All Mankind, which I think was very interesting, very imaginative, very well produced. I enjoyed every one of those episodes. I also very much enjoyed the new Mythic Quest, Raven's Banquet. I think that was a great, fun show. And Dickinson. So two of the comedy kind of shows I really, really enjoyed. And I also enjoyed, surprisingly, The Morning Show, because I thought that was one that I wasn't going to enjoy. And I thought I was going to really enjoy C, the series, the sci-fi series from Ronald Moore with Jason Momoa. I thought that was going to be the show that really hooked me. And I did enjoy that. I felt it took a while to build up. By the end of the first season, I was interested enough to say, hey, I am really curious to see what happens with the second season. I loved the concept of that. I thought it was beautiful in terms of how it was filmed and the world building stuff. But I don't think I got sucked in as much by the characters. And I'm hoping that it gets a little bit better. But it was still a good show. Are there better shows out there? Absolutely. But I think it was worth my time to watch it, and I'm interested to see what happens next. And like I said, there's a bunch of other content on there that I thought was really great. You know, I'm very excited about the next season of For All Mankind and Raven and Mythic Quest and Dickinson and The Morning Show. So they have hooked me with their content, and compared to some of the stuff that I've seen on some of the other services, there's great stuff on other services that I love and I watch as well. You know, Hulu, Netflix, Amazon, all of those places, HBO when I had it, although I did cancel my HBO subscription recently because they just don't have some of the shows that I want to watch. But point is that I'm enjoying the content in a bunch of different places. And I think overall, for all of the shows that I've watched on Apple, they have a lot more in terms of not content, like the number of shows, but many of the shows that I've watched on there, I want to continue watching. And I can't say that as much for some of the other services. I'll watch the first season of a show on another service, and yeah, maybe I'm not going to continue with that. I'll find another one, though, that probably is great on that service. So just because of sheer volume. I'll also say that I have enjoyed a couple of the Little America stories. I haven't finished that one. It didn't hook me as much, so I kind of started to watch it, and I fell off to watch some other things. But still, it was well produced and some great creative stories, and, you know, it's interesting. So I like what Apple's doing. Yeah, the quantity's not there yet, but for me, I think they are living up to the quality, and I think in a much bigger way than the critics are giving them credit for. But again, that's just my opinion. Like I said, I'm willing to admit I might have rainbow-colored glasses on here, and I might be a little bit biased, but I mean, we're talking about content. We're not talking about technology products here, and it's a very different thing. Maybe I'm just not as critical about my content, but I just enjoy a good, fun story. I like characters that are interesting. I think that's important for me when telling a story, but sometimes, too, I just like something I don't have to think about too much, right? And I can just sit down and watch and enjoy. And I, you know, as I don't mind all those other things that we talked about, you know, sex, nudity, graphic violence in my shows. Hey, I loved Game of Thrones, right? And that's got all of that stuff. But I don't need that in everything that I watch. And I can appreciate that Apple has minimized that a little bit, and it doesn't bother me. And I know that's something that the critics harp on, and I don't know why. I don't know why we've gotten to that point, and that does bug me a little bit. Again, I'm not against any of that, but I like a mix of these things. And I think what Apple is offering is very interesting, and I do think that they're getting hit a little bit harder because they're Apple. And I'm happy to hear anybody tell me that they think I'm wrong on that. I'm also happy if you think I'm right. So please send, let's talk about this a little bit. Send your comments, send your audio comments especially, and your emails to me, maccast@gmail.com. But with that, that is going to do it for the show for this week. I do want to take a quick moment and thank my show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, along with PDF Pen for iOS. You can get more information and check out all of their great applications by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at CacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. You can find them at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline, that phone number 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. And if you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And if you want to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. You can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast, or check out the MacCast Instagram, MacCast on Instagram. And with that, that's going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.